sky blue days. These are sky blue days. When the CBS and the SBA will fight to the end and lead the way. Sing out together.
Sky Blue Fans TV, for the fans, by the fans.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Sky Blues Fans TV. Tonight, myself, Glenn, are joined by author Stuart Quigley, who is the author of a book on the Premier League era called The Cornerstone Collection. So, good evening, Stuart. Thank you for giving up your afternoon, evening to speak to us. Just firstly, tell us a little bit about yourself and obviously how the book came to be published and the background to it.
First of all, absolutely a pleasure, and I really thank you for having us on. Second of all, in terms of how the book came about, like all good ideas, it started with a few drinks. And way back when, about 5 years ago now, a few friends and myself had maybe one too many adult beverages. And we got an idea to start a podcast, and we started a podcast. And it was about doing the Premier League in a way that had never been done before. And it was about doing the Premier League backwards. I don't know if you've seen the film Memento, but once you've got the idea of pre-Memento, then it's all, you don't even need to do anything else. It's all said and done. Anyway, we did that for a couple of years and tried to sort of squeeze as much juice out of that as we could. And then when it came to season three, a challenge was set down. I don't really know which genius came up with it, but we wanted to tell the story of the Premier League through all the players. And I, being the person that had Microsoft Excel, put a spreadsheet together. And you know, there are quite a lot of players that have played in the Premier League. And we tried to caveat that with, we tried to add another dimension to it by, you know, we're going to try and make it so that we could cover every club that's ever played in the Premier League, whether we're talking about the early 90s or the mid-2000s or even like the current day, every team. And I really enjoyed that process. And when it came to be, I was really proud of what we did. And I pitched that as a book. And here we are 2 years later. Things have changed. Some players have gone. Some players have come in. And yeah, my book, Cornerstone Collection, 45 different chapters covering the 50 different teams that have ever played in the Premier League. Each chapter is a player. Some clubs are represented more than others. I want to sort of emphasise two things. First of all, this isn't like, oh, we're going to talk about Thierry Henry, we're going to talk about Steven Gerrard, we're going to talk about Frank Lampard. There are some really, really influential and really talented and iconic Premier League players in there. But I think fundamentally what I wanted to do was tell the full story of the Premier League. And what that required was to move outwards and look at some of the stories and the players and the clubs that weren't just necessarily what everyone has heard before.
Yeah, because there's some quite like interesting stories just from going back from a Coventry City perspective. There's obviously like Julian Darby, who scored twice to deny Blackburn any chance of winning the league. And he's totally a random player that probably anyone outside of Coventry or Blackburn's never even heard of. And then I think there's the player who scored the first goal, which I think was Brian Dean. I think it was the first Premier League goal. Yes. And then I think Coventry were top or something. I think they went top after like three games or something random like that. So yeah, there's some quite interesting characters going back, because obviously that's when I first started following Coventry City, which was 92-93. And it was, I think my first game was Man City at home when it was Mick Quinn's debut. So he was like my first proper hero. And he's a character, you'd never see someone like Mick Quinn playing professional football these days. Because, you know, I mean, on the halfway line, warming up, asking me and my dad who'd won the 230 at Lingfield or whatever, because he knew that me and dad had like a bet on it. And then there was obviously some other players who you got to see play at Highfield Road, who were really, really like legends of the game. Like obviously Eric Cantona's last football match was at Cov before he retired for David Booth's testimonial. So yeah, that era always appealed to me. We've done quite a lot of podcasts with players from that era, probably some of the lesser known players, but it's always an interesting area because we had Big Ron, Phil Neal, Bobby Gould, I mean, Gordon Strachan, you couldn't have a more diverse character range of manager than then. Nowadays, we've got Mark Robbins, who's quite placid and not really controversial. But you've got Big Ron, who's larger than life. Gordon Strachan, yes. who taught the hind legs off a donkey. And Bobby Gould, who's a great bloke. And then you obviously have Phil Neal, who everyone remembers from the Graham Taylor documentary. Just obviously before we move on, you covered a couple of Coventry City players in the book. What was the hardest club to research or hardest club to pick a person from out the range you did?
Well, I think there are restraints that if you want to put yourself in, okay. And I think what I need to state before I go any further is that it's a good exercise in terms of like, if you're going to sit down and you're going to go 50 teams, 45 players, who would you include? Because there are going to be some players that are going to be sort of cast iron because they only ever played one season in the Premier League. Like, if anyone listening to this wants to pick who the Blackpool player would be, I suspect we'd all have the same guy. Let's put it that way. And you might go random, why not? But like, in terms of trying to fit everyone in and trying to make sure that these players have a resonance, have a feeling and are important to not just team, but story as well, then you get to push yourself into a different corner. And maybe in some circumstances, you just decide, I'm going to go against that. But in a couple of ones where it's like, I only played one season, like Brentford's a good example. They finished their first season in the Premier League last year. And you would think, okay, you can go with Ivan Toney. And there are maybe a couple of other players that have played like very brief periods in time in the Premier League. But just as a spoiler, just between you and us, no one's listening to this, it's none of those. It's Sergio Canos. He scored the first goal that they ever scored in the Premier League. So you become sort of beholden to the restrictions you give yourself. And with Coventry, it's a really interesting period because you've got like a lot of years to pick from and a lot of players to pick from. So with some clubs like Oldham, Swindon, Barnsley, I mentioned Blackpool, I mentioned Brentford just, you'd sort of, there's not loads to pick from. I think Huddersfield as well, there's not loads to pick from. Huddersfield fans are really going to kill me for this. But like, I think what I want to sort of emphasise actually before we go into deeper about the Coventry players to talk about is I don't think it's necessarily, if I'm talking about the Huddersfield chapter, I don't think that applies to just them. I also think the chapters that aren't Coventry, they don't apply to just Coventry fans because there's a lot of bleeding between the stories and football fans are football fans. I know we all divide ourselves by the colours that we wear, but there are certain things that echo across fan bases. And so in terms of the book as a whole, it might be sort of uniform across the board. But in terms of trying to find someone that played for Swindon, that might be a little harder than you normally expect.
Should have gone for our number 285, Ash. Actually, the one
to be fair, if I like, I'm saying this just because this is someone that I remember from way back when, but like Moldovan for Coventry was on my radar big time, but there's no way I could have done it, but it would have been amazing.
He's very polarizing. He's remembered for a great moment, which was scoring against Aston Villa, but then a lot of people, Cov fans, remember him for he missed an absolute gilt edge chance away at Sheffield United in the FA Cup, and he's remembered for that as well. You probably take it for granted the Premier League. I probably did till we dropped down the levels. And then I think we played Stoke in the FA Cup when they were Premier League side. It was the first time that my eldest Ben had seen us play a Premier League side. And I kind of had to say to him, I got this every week. And I probably didn't take it for granted. I took it for granted at your age. I said, and then we went away to Brighton in the FA and got knocked out. And then obviously he's been away at Watford and been seen as play other Premier League teams. And I was like, I got to do this every week for years. And that was quite interesting. And you like, right, I remember Swindon, like I think we lost at Swindon. And that was, they were relegated and conceding goals for fun that year. We'd always lose to the worst team in the league. That was the Coventry City thing. So moving on to obviously the Coventry City players. Who were the players that you selected for Coventry City? I can probably guess one of them.
Yeah, I think one's very obvious. And not only just obvious to Cov, but I think also at the time that Coventry were in the Premier League, I think it's a really important era to hark back on, because that sort of first 10 years is so formative, not just in terms of the Premier League, but in terms of English football, in terms of football in general, because not a lot changed really in those first 10 years, as opposed to in the early 2000s, where the money became so viable that teams were doing this. And then over the last 10 years, the tactics has expanded so much. But in those first 10 years, it's so crucial. And the first one I want to talk about first is someone that I said, talk about eras, talk about players. It's not necessarily the most enamoured Coventry player of all time, but it's a key point, if for nothing else, how he signed for the club. But Craig Bellamy.
Yeah, he's one. He's very Cough fans are very anti him. But
I can understand
he wasn't the right signing for us at the time, because he was coming back from an injury and he wasn't Robbie Keane. And anyone coming after Robbie Keane was on a hiding to nothing. In the same way that if we sell Gus Hamer this summer, which is likely, anyone coming in after Hamer's got such a high bar, it's going to be very hard to get on. And I think he was on a bit of a hiding to nothing. But yeah, I think that his version of the deal was that he kind of felt like he had a gun held to his head about signing, and he didn't really want to come.
Being in the meeting with Gordon Strachan at the time, and that's in and of itself talking about a specific era. I would just like to point out, by the way, that Craig Bellamy isn't in there because of his Cov days. The Cov days are but a note to be touched upon. But they are an interesting note to be touched upon, just because of the fact that it is the season where things went badly wrong. It is the season where, you know, the redeeming act wasn't there where it had been before. And as you said before, like, he wasn't Robbie Keane and he wasn't, you know, the player that everyone that's a Coventry fan could be telling me before, that we're going to talk about in a second. But Bellamy at Cov, Bellamy's an important Premier League player just because of who he played for and the amount of clubs he played for. But unfortunately for Cov fans, it's a really sour note to be at that end of the scale.
I do think with Bellamy, if he didn't have the bad Cov experience, it probably made him as a player. It probably made him a bit stronger and a bit more determined, and he probably appreciated his move to Newcastle a bit more than he probably did. I think a lot of players say they've got to have the bad times to appreciate the good times, and there's no doubt he is a Premier League great. You look what he did and what he did there, and I think Blackburn, Man City, I probably missed a few out.
Liverpool, Cardiff, West Ham.
There's not many players who played for that many Premier League clubs.
He also did say about, like, well, Gordon Strachan helped him after injury because he was sort of like hiding and he didn't want to get injured again, and Strachan helped him out in that regard. So in terms of his trajectory, it did probably help him, as you say. But in terms of Cov, it's an idea. And the thing about it is that when Cov finally go, because I'm slightly, thank you, like, I'm just putting myself over here. Like, the first couple of seasons I remember is like 95, 96, but in fact, this isn't a spoiler. Cov for me, when I grew up, I had a steady diet of Cov in the Premier League. The Sky Blues were, and as to this day, I look at the league tables and I'm going, like, that's what I'm talking about, Coventry. And there was that brief period during the Championship last year, and this is why it's fantastic to see the days that have come now of potentially Cov coming back. But when I look at the eventual relegation, it's one of these things where everything went wrong and the players weren't necessarily there. And there's talk about, like, the older pros and when Bellamy was brought on such money and it didn't quite work out. And I don't want to focus on that, to be honest with you, because those are the bad times. Those are the end of times. But like I say, Cov in the Premier League, and I'm going to get there. I'm going to do it. I'm going to spoil it, because, to be honest with you, this isn't a spoiler. If any neutral fans are listening to this, they might be like thinking, okay, who's he going to talk about? Any Cov fans listening to this, I know exactly what I'm talking about. The other Coventry player in the book is Dion Dublin,
which is another person who polarises fans' opinions. There are people that absolutely hate him for the way he left the club to the Villa. But then there's me, who remembers him as probably one of our greatest ever signings, and he was such a leader on and off the pitch. And he was absolutely immense in some games for us, and went on to obviously play for England. Should have really gone to the World Cup under Glenn Hoddle, yes. Unless Ferdinand got picked ahead of him. But he was absolutely class. I just think the way he left, probably his version of how he left and the club's version are slightly different. And I can see why he left the way he did. But I always think it's a bit sad that he got a bit of a rough ride and then he broke his neck. I can't remember when it was, and then cough fans singing songs like that. And I think he's never come back to a lot any Legends days or anything. I think it's only recently that he's come and done events in Coventry, like guest speaking. But like him, Huckabee and Whelan were absolutely class, class people.
And let's be fair, like the team that Coventry had, and I've already sort of prefaced this by saying that as I grew up, this was a side that I heavily associated with, like being a sting in the tail. And, you know, I'm not a Coventry fan, I'm a Liverpool supporter, but, you know, like Dion Dublin, Coventry, Liverpool, there's a very famous victory at Anfield in which set up Coventry to stay up. And I always associate this particular period of time and this particular club and this particular player with, like, that's what I grew up with. And it is a shame in terms of his exit and in terms of what happened to be associated with, you know, refusing to play. You can't ever really get around that. But one thing I would ask is that I'm not going to turn around and be sort of blasé to say time heals all wounds. But in terms of Dion Dublin's legacy as a villain, and that's a sort of ironic word of... It's a really bad word to use given the fact that he went to the Villa. But what I would say is that given the fact of what happened to Coventry since and the real sort of trials and tribulations of going down and all the terrible ownership things that went on there, I'm going to ask you the question now, like, is he as bad as that? He can't be really, because it's really bad at the time, but unfortunately... And this is football. This is not just what's happened with Coventry, the ownership things and what the EFL have done and what the Premier League and the FA in terms of who they let run certain clubs and how they let certain clubs run. Like, it's almost sort of you can let a player off of wanting to leave. You don't want the player to leave, especially a player of that standard. But there are bigger villains in the Coventry piece over the last 20 years is what I would say. I don't know if that's correct.
No, I think I'd agree. I think football fans are very fickle. You've only got to look at Wayne Rooney. He got absolutely vilified by Everton fans for going to Man United. And then he came back and they loved him. And then they probably would have him as manager this time. Yeah. And I think it's always with football fans. They have a very short-term memory. And whereas I look at it, that I never have a problem with a player leaving if I think it benefits the club. I think there's certain players in the past who've left Coventry and they haven't left for the right reason. We've had a debate at the moment with our podcast team. Obviously, we've got Victor Gyökeres, who's likely to be a target for other people this summer. And the issue is he's got a possibility of Middlesbrough wanting him or Fulham. Now, if he moves to Middlesbrough, I don't see that as progression, and a lot of the team don't in the podcast team. Whereas if he went to Fulham, he's going to Premier League club. I haven't got a problem with him. Wish him well, shake his hand. But if he goes to Middlesbrough, I just see that as a sideways move with no benefit. And I get why Dublin held out for Aston Villa and didn't want to go to Blackburn, because he saw Aston Villa as a bigger team at the time. And that's totally understandable. And if he had an agreement in place, then you should really stick to it and honour it. And I would say if he's someone who I would rank in my top five Cov players, he's up there with Mickey Quinn and Noel Whelan and Huckabee as some of the best players that I've seen. The irony is he was also a player who nearly was instrumental in his getting relegated, because he managed to get sent off twice in the space of two games. And it was back in the day where you didn't automatically get banned, and he got a 7-game ban. And that totally derailed our season, where we were doing quite well. And then we went on a run where we didn't actually win. And then he came back into the team and ended up playing at the back. And then we obviously had the great escape at White Hart Lane that day when Middlesbrough and Sunderland screwed it up. And we won at Spurs. But yeah, that's the argument. That's the kind of the Dion Dublin. You can look at it. He did some really, really good stuff for us, but he also did some not so good stuff. But I always look at it, the good stuff outweighs the not so good stuff on it. But yeah, I mean, he's definitely someone who I think, well, I mean, we paid $2 million, I think, for him. And yeah. he was really a nobody. He was going nowhere at Man United. And he came in and just made an instant impact and was brilliant. And I don't think there was a better target man in the Premier League.
Unique set of circumstances that Dublin gets to Coventry in the first place, having been at Cambridge and losing to Blackburn. Off the top of my head, you'll excuse me for not remembering the 1991-1992 Division One player final, but he ends up at Man United because Man United want Alan Shearer. They don't get Alan Shearer because Blackburn go up. He goes there, he scores the first goal in Man United's first ever victory in the Premier League, which is in and of itself sort of bedrock of what became a dynasty. Breaks his leg, then gets replaced by Eric Cantona, can't get back in the team. And then, you know, just to get to Highfield Road in the first place, a lot of things have to happen.
Yeah, so yeah, it was quite a bit of. I remember when he signed, it was quite a bit seen as a gamble because it was quite a bit of money for Coventry City to pay at the time. But yeah, his link up with McAllister offset pieces was legendary. He was deadly penalty taker, except Sheffield United away in the FA Cup when Jermaine decided to miss. And that's probably the sliding door moment because I think if Coventry City win that game, we go to Newcastle, who were probably not in the greatest form. If we beat Newcastle, we get to an FA Cup final. We may well have, even if we'd lost, we may well have got into Europe. And who knows if we got European football, what we could and couldn't have done on it. So that's one of the great if-only games that you wish you could turn the clock back and change it, unfortunately.
I think that's one of the things about the book that I've found out since been doing it, that you think when you're a supporter of your own club, oh, what could have happened if this? There's like about 1,000 across maybe even a single weekend of football. The thing that is fascinating is not just about what happened in the Premier League as it grew to the 30 years since it started. It's about what could have happened in between those sort of branches off. And I said at the top, what we're talking about is a league that's 3 decades old. And what happened in that first decade was arguably just to set the foundation, probably more important. And also as well, like forgotten what the teams that were there at the time and the players that were there. And that's why I wanted to sort of stretch out from some of the same old players and same old teams that people have been talking about, just to make sure that everyone gets the full coverage. And like I say, I've got my own bias because as a 90s kid, like growing up in that particular period of time, it does kind of feel to me like the Premier League was made the best part to grow up and watch that kind of football. And 90s football always has a special place in most people's hearts that are around at the time. And for me, there's no different. And Coven and Dion Dublin and like Gary McAllister and Steven Grzywicz and Gary Breen. And like I mentioned Moldovan before, and there are a couple of other players that I really wish I could remember that are like one-offs that like barely even played for Coventry, that didn't really take to the field. They were just bought as a random. And, you know, the Premier League is full of that from club to club and from team to team. And it's just, that's the story I want to tell, as full of a story as I could tell. And I said to like the listeners before, if you want to try and make your 45, even if you make your 45, even if you tell your 45, there's always like, once you scratch the surface, this is the great thing about English football, there's always more.
Yeah, it's very subjective. Like when you try and pick your best team. So we've done that in the past, tried to pick our best team. And it's so subjective because people come from different eras. But yeah, there's so many great stories in the Premier League. There's obviously one that I think about. You say players who hardly played a game for a club. We had Chris White, who was the ex-Leeds, Arsenal, Birmingham City centre-half. He played one game for us. I think he scored. And we beat Blackburn 5-0 when they were champions at home.
Mm.
And that's, and he never played for Cobb again. He played one game because we'd signed him and he was on a ban. He was on a three-game ban. But we signed him on loan because it was when the bans didn't come straight away. And yeah, we had some random players who played for us and some really good ones. And obviously Peter Wood Love is probably the one that I always think about.
Yeah.
Then obviously you've got Neil Ampty, who never really played for us or Aston Villa, but when he did play the odd game, he was brilliant. But he was like the next Pele and world beater, and I don't know whatever happened to him. He went playing somewhere in Qatar or Dubai or somewhere like that. But yeah, there was some really random players. But there's some, like I say, there was some really, really good players, and you forget who you got to see play in that era, like Scholes, Beckham, Giggs, etc. Henri, Davor Suka, and there's some like Desai and LaBeouf, who Dublin and Huckabee destroyed two opening games of the season in a row. Dublin got a hat trick, I always remember that. But yeah, it was definitely a really good, interesting era. And you can tell a lot of people do go back and watch that highlights and stuff. And it is something that a lot of fans look back on quite fondly in memories. And you speak to anyone about Coventry City, they normally say about Highfield Road or Dublin, or they say about Unloved. It's always the way when you talk to anyone about that. So just obviously a little bit about the book. I think the book's out in July, isn't it?
Yeah, the Kindle version is out in June, but if you want the hardback cover, which is like, I love me a good, like you need to put that on your bookshelves, it is out in July, and it's available from Amazon, Waterstones, WH Smith. If you go onto my Twitter, it's just at SQ Studios, you've got the link there. I'm pretty sure you can get some good deals on it as well. Various different outlets have it at various different prices, so I'll just check that. But definitely go out and have a look. But yeah, it's basically, if you're looking for as complete a history of the Premier League as you can ever get, I think there isn't really an event that is missed. There isn't really a team that is overlooked, apart from maybe Huddersfield and Bournemouth, as I mentioned before. Their fans are really going to hurt me. But like, what I'm saying is that like, to try and fit all of this in, you know, I've covered everything. We've covered everyone. And all the stories and the connections between the players and the fan bases. And if you're a football fan, you'll absolutely love it.
Yeah, there's definitely a market. Got back into reading books. I've got a few football books about Cove City to read. And definitely, obviously, the whole football market in terms of podcasting and social media and content like that's definitely, ever since probably lockdowns, took a big rise up onto it. So what's next for you then, Stuart?
I think next is, as we record this, just to not sort of peek behind the curtain, we're not that far away from what would have been the sort of penultimate before the World Cup, if it would have been a normal year. We've got to the end of the season, and sometimes you want a break, sometimes you want to just sort of take your, I don't know, I can't be arsed with football anymore. I'm done. This is it. I need to sort of take a couple of months out. But especially in a World Cup year that would have been, but I'm ready. I need to take maybe like a week off, and then we'll get to the next season. And so much going on with all the internationals, and I could take international football here or there. However, what I would say is that like, I'm chomping at the bit for the next season to start, and trying to get back to football again, because without it, Saturdays are empty. And I'm just going to be promoting the book absolutely left, right and centre, because this is a story that I've been telling for the last 3 years, and having put it down, I would say pen to paper, but it's more like keys to keyboard, and it's been fantastic. And like I said, I'm a bit of a football ring romantic, so I've absolutely really enjoyed learning about the history of all the clubs as I've learnt them through these players, and for people to read this book and to hopefully either learn something that they haven't about clubs that they don't really know, or even in the Premier League or times gone by, or just to sort of enjoy the fact that, you know, we've got a few months before the season starts again, so we need to get some football injection into our lives. So you could do it via this.
I've already bought my first tickets, the first pre-season game.
We've
got Leamington away in, I think it's the 2nd of July, so I've booked my tickets for that just to get out of the house and away from it. Thank you very much for joining us, Stuart. If you just want to obviously plug your socials again, just so obviously everyone listening can check out what you've been up to and obviously the links for the book.
Sure. If you want to go on at SQ Studios on Twitter, that will give you all the links to the book. And that'll be, obviously, that's my personal profile. And at the Beer Map, which is the website where we did the podcast originally and from where the book comes from. That's on a little bit of a hiatus for now. But in the summer, we'll try and bring some back now. And I really appreciate you having us on. It's been fantastic to talk about this. I love just going back in time and reminiscing. So I really appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Stuart. All the best.
Cheers.
That just leaves us one thing to say. Play up, Sky Blues.
These are Sky Blue days. These are Sky Blue days. When the CBS and the SBA will fight to the end and lead the way. Sing out together.
Sky Blue Fans TV. For the fans, by the fans.